Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy a special episode of the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast. Today, Seth has an extended conversation with comedian Julio Torres, who is currently writing for Saturday Night Live. Then you'll hear Julio's stand-up set from his recent appearance on Late Night. Let's go to Seth and Julio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Late Night Podcast. I'm here with Julio Torres. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me, Seth.
And it's very exciting. You're going to do stand-up on the show tonight.
Correct.
But I wanted to take this opportunity to talk to you because I've been such a fan of your work on the show. This is your first full season of SNL.
Yes.
You guest wrote the last three shows.
The last three episodes of season 41.
And being a guest writer can be a tricky proposition. How was your experience being a guest writer?
It was definitely interesting to walk into a job where everyone sort of knows what they're doing and they're all gears in this very tight mechanism.
Particularly at the end of the year.
Particularly at the end of the year where no one is new.
And you were the only guest writer, yes? You came in alone?
I was the only guest writer, yes.
Yeah.
Luckily, I had friends there. Yeah.
That's good. It's very intimidating, and I remember when we used to have people in for guest writing, it can, I feel like a lot of people think, oh my God, if I could only get in there and show them my stuff, it will lead to a job.
Sure.
But it's actually rare for guest writers to get hired like you did. I think Michael Che, it happened for him.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of guest writers who come through, and over the course of just having a very small window of opportunity, there's a sense that you can sort of underwhelm because you're up against these impossible odds of what you just said. You're the new person amongst...
I felt like my guest writing time there, I spent a lot of time just sort of charging my phone. And just sort of being like a behind-the-scenes mascot of sorts. I'm just like, I'm here, hi.
Did you get anything on those last three shows?
I helped write a Mother's Day sketch that did get
Good. Who did you write that with?
I wrote with Sudi Green and Sashir Sameda.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And did you know them before?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so that's nice.
So that's nice because I didn't have to go through the awkwardness of introducing myself to everyone there.
Well, I guess one of the most important things, other than showing people how you write, is showing people your personality. Because ultimately, if somebody's going to then say to Lauren, hey, I think we should bring Julio back full time.
Yeah.
They're only going to do that if they like.
They're only going to mention, they're only going to bring it up if you're not a disaster.
And did you manage, do you think, to present yourself well? Were you nervous or did you feel like you had enough friends around that you could show people the true version of you? Because that I also feel like, I felt like I was there for a long time before I actually got to be myself. Comfortable enough.
No, I don't think I was nervous. I think I was sort of like, well, this is me. And it's sort of not going to change.
Yeah.
So if you like it, then great. And if you don't, then I've lived all my life without this job. And I can certainly keep doing that.
Was it helpful? Obviously, you're a stand-up. And you have a wonderful, and it seems very well-honed, stand-up persona. Do you think that helped as far as giving you the confidence of, okay, guys, I have this voice. It's very specific. It's sort of stage-tested. And so I'm going to stick with what I know in myself
the sort
to
of,
be.
In the sort of like, again, in the sort of like, this is what you get.
Yeah.
You saw this, you added to the cart, and it arrived.
Yeah.
And you have this little test period with it, but it won't be that different than from what you made you buy it.
The nice thing that, and then I think it and I want to talk about what you've done this season because I feel like it's so unique. I feel like one thing you had going for you is I can't imagine there was anyone at the show that was doing Julio stuff before you showed up. Like, you weren't a bump with anybody.
No, I certainly, there was no one, or there weren't many pitches about inanimate objects.
Yeah.
Having existential crises.
You've sort of, yeah, that's sort of your thing.
So, and I truly believe that America needs it and wants it and they're thirsty for it. So, hey, I'm just here to give them what they want.
So when did you find out you were going to join the staff full time? Did they tell you at the end of last season or you were
no,
sort of
sometime mid-summer, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then did that provide some relief as far as, oh, it's so great to know that in the fall I'm going to come and do this show?
You know, I kind of take it one day at a time. So when I was asked to come back.
Very positive. It's a very good outlook for the show.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I was asked to come back, I thought, okay.
Great.
Yeah.
I think that's really good.
Yeah.
I got overwhelmed in the beginning, I think, because I had this wild swing from, oh my God, I've got it made, to, oh my God, I'm the worst at this ever.
Well, yes, because it. What I always thought is that being hired at a job isn't an accomplishment. What you do at the job is the accomplishment.
Right.
So seeing people go from like, I'm the king of the world, I work for television, to, oh dear God, there are so many other people that work for television.
Yeah.
Can be rough.
Especially when you're new and you realize, oh, not only are there more
people.
Especially
for a show that we've all loved for so long.
Yeah.
I wasn't extremely nervous, but the show is something that I've loved and admired for so long, and I try to not become overjoyed or overwhelmed.
So when did you learn about the show? Because when did you move here?
I moved to America from El Salvador in 2009.
So you were how old?
I was 20 or 21.
Okay, gotcha. And did you have any sort of, did you
I
have
did.
A sense?
Yes,
okay, gotcha.
I did. So I, we had, I think it was like a stolen cable signal or something, and we got American TV. And we specifically got, for some reason, the local New York NBC affiliate.
Okay.
So I feel like I've been watching like local New York news since I was a preteen in El Salvador.
And were you unique? Did a lot of other people have that signal, or amongst your friends, did you?
I think I knew maybe one or two other people that were familiar and liked SNL. But not a whole lot. It's not like I wouldn't have a lot of people to talk about it with. It was just sort of this strange thing that I saw on TV that I really liked. That and Late Night when Conan had it.
Sure.
Those were, I think, my two main shows at that time. And I really, first it seemed like impossible to imagine myself affiliated with any of that because it was in a different country, in a different language, and in a, you know, I knew no one who was in show business, of course. But I don't know. I always loved it.
So you came here for college?
Yes.
Okay.
I came here for the new school.
All right. So you come to New York, and at this point, had you done any comedy in El Salvador?
No.
Okay. Gotcha. And so how quickly did you find yourself doing it here?
Not very quickly. I wanted to write, like, I wanted to have this career as, like, a playwright that would, like, find a muse and would just, like, tailor these, like, long-winded monologues for, like, new actresses.
Gotcha.
And that's all I wanted to do.
That is a major at the new school, right? Finding a muse?
Yes, finding a muse is definitely a major. A lot of beautiful, tragic women from LA go to the new school. So that was very helpful. But that's what I wanted to do. And then I graduated and I still wanted to do that. But of course, I got a liberal arts degree, so I had no idea how to do anything. aside from a few very specific, like, close reading exercises.
Yeah.
So then I thought, well, what can I do that doesn't necessitate other people, that doesn't need, that I don't have to spend any money at, where I can just write a lot and showcase it? And then stand-up was sort of the answer to that question. So then I just did it the next day, and it was like, oh, okay.
And what sort of rooms did you first start doing your stand-up in?
Well, first I Googled New York comedy open mic.
Got it. So at this point, you didn't even have friends in the comedy world to ask.
No.
You went straight to the internet.
No, I went straight to the internet, which is actually Google's what brought me to New York in the first place.
Got it.
Because I Googled liberal arts college scholarship international student, and the New School came up.
This is a real nice advertisement for Google.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
It's been there with you every step of the way.
Yeah, they've been there for me every step of the way. So then I would frequent this open mic at an Italian restaurant in Little Italy. It was called Cha-Cha's.
Uh-huh.
And I was, I think, one of the youngest people at Cha-Cha's by far.
Okay.
Because it was all mostly people commuting from, like, Long Island or, like, New Jersey. And
this is upstate. The comedians you're talking about?
Yes. This is the comedians we're talking about. And they all had families and jobs and were all, like, very, very adult. But I loved... Yeah, I don't know. For a while, it seemed like my whole comedy world was that mic in the middle of an Italian restaurant.
Did you find a camaraderie with those other comedians, even though you were sort of an outlier?
I started meeting some people, yeah. But it wasn't actually till that mic shut down that I was forced to look for other alternatives where I found, like, people... like-minded people.
Gotcha.
Else.
Yeah. So if Cha-Cha's had been more successful, you'd still be there.
If Cha-Cha's had gone on forever, I'd still be there.
You'd still maybe headlining at this point.
Maybe headlining at this point. Yeah. Yeah.
So then now you're doing stand-up with more like-minded people.
Yes.
And do you feel like you developed a voice over a course of time? Do you feel like what you do now? I mean, I feel like I'm more familiar with the work you've done in the last couple of years. Is that where you started? Or do you think you...
Kind of. I feel like the first time that I did stand-up, I was sort of doing my... I was accidentally doing my impression of what I thought a stand-up was like. So then I would try to lean on the mic stand, but it was so rehearsed. It was like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, lean, comfortable, back... and it wasn't until later that I realized that I am at my most comfortable being uncomfortable. And I am, the best avenue for me is to just completely strip any movement or range.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I like writing the most.
Sure.
That it's like, sometimes I see it as like, okay, so I've written these things. And this is just sort of an audio transcript of the jokes.
You're sort of stripping away any artifice and just making the words. You're just delivering the words.
I'm just sort of delivering the words, yes. Yeah.
So I want to talk about this year. Is Melania Moments the first thing you got on this year?
Yes, it
is.
Okay.
Yeah. Was it the first show?
That was the first show, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. So that was and I feel like, did only one air the first show?
Yes. We filmed all three of them the first week. But one aired the first show, and then the other two aired during the subsequent shows.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And so...
I was only asking for 20 seconds of airtime.
And you got it.
And I got it. Yeah.
Lauren said, I can't give you 60.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
I'll give you 20 a week for
I'll
3 weeks.
I'll give you 20 a week for 3 weeks, and then we'll see how it goes.
So you, I feel like you have this... The way you conceive Melania is a very fun, unique take on her. Is that where this sort of idea started? Is your own take on Melania, or
yeah? Well, the Melania variations of the Melania Moments that aired had been part of my stand-up for a while.
I see.
And at this point, I had written extensively about just sort of the genre of a broken, isolated, fragile woman.
She might have been your muse this whole time, Melania.
But she, I think, was the first one that was topical.
Yeah.
Because the show wasn't going to take my, like, take on Isabella Rossellini.
Right. That's true.
Or not just yet, at least.
You needed a topical broken woman.
I needed a topical one. I needed a headline one.
Yeah.
And Cecily was incredible in it.
Yeah, Cecily was great. They looked great. Who directed those?
Dave McCary.
Okay, so Dave McCary is a director I knew from when I was there.
Yes.
And he came with
Beck and Kyle
and Beck. Yeah. And he shot a lot of their stuff,
yes,
which is a completely different style. But I heard that you guys, have you worked together exclusively on your stuff?
Yeah, with the exception of one short.
Okay.
They've all been Dave, and I love working with Dave so much.
That's really nice.
And he's very particular. He's very, my favorite moments, I think, are being in the editing room and spending maybe a good 3 hours deciding on the font for something.
So what percentage, I know you had live sketches on the show, what percentage though, I feel like a lot of your stuff has been film pieces.
Yeah. What percentage has been live?
Yeah.
0.5%.
Well, Hamsters, wasn't that live?
You read Hamsters. That's it.
Okay,
yeah.
That's it. Okay, good. So,
that's
well, this is interesting because I think the film pieces have become such an integral part of the show. They always were, but now there are more.
I think when you were talking about just sort of finding your own corner in the show, I sort of accidentally, but very purposely
right,
gravitated towards film, which I love. Yeah.
And it does seem to dovetail very nicely with your sensibility because,
yes, a lot of the moments are smaller and a lot of the cues are visual.
Mm-hmm. So you did Melania moments. I want to talk about maybe, well, you have a lot of unique pieces, but Sync is a personal favorite of mine.
Sure, yeah.
So Sync is, what, 90 seconds?
Oh, I love that you love Sync. Yes, something around.
And I apologize for this because I do watch the show. Don't take this the wrong way. I do tend to watch it the next day on Hulu more than I watch it live.
Yeah.
I'm an older man with a child.
Yeah.
Was that, so sometimes I see stuff that was like cut from air online. Was Sync in the show?
No, Sync made the show.
Sync made the show. Okay, great.
Shocked.
That was fantastic.
Yeah.
So for those who haven't seen Sync, Sync is Emily Blunt is voicing a Sync that is having an existential crisis.
It was a juicy role for her.
How does a piece like
in,
is, she's fantastic.
She's truly,
I listened
amazing
to it,
her voice,
I watched
so
it again
beautiful
today, and her voice is a miracle.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah.
It's crazy to say this, I can't imagine anyone else being Sync.
No one.
No, she played Sync
her
in a way.
Or no one.
You weren't gonna do Sync unless you got Blunt.
Yes, exactly.
And how does Sync play at the table, because it's so visual.
Sure. I pitched it to a couple of people and I got a lot of polite smiles.
Yeah.
Like, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. And I could see that they had I could see that the green light was very much like, well, we got to let the new people do what they're trying to do. And I think Emily was also sort of like, huh? Okay. it wasn't until Jeremy Byler helped me a lot with this piece. He co-wrote it, and he's so great. It wasn't until we included a picture of the sink in the script,
right,
that people sort of got it. Because this is a sink that I met 2 years ago, I think.
This was a question of mine.
Yeah.
Was this inspired by the specific sink?
This specific sink.
Got it.
I met Sync.
Okay.
2 years ago, I think, at a friend of a friend's apartment. And I took a look at it and thought, I will one day make you a star.
That's great.
And I will come back for you.
And now, all right, so when it came time for you to get a picture of Sync,
yes,
did you then call that friend of a friend? Or had you at this point?
So many pictures on my phone of the Sync when I first met it.
On the first day you met it, you knew well
on
enough to take.
On the first day I met it, I took maybe 7 pictures of it, because I was so taken by it.
So did SNL then find the exact sync?
Yes.
They did.
They
okay
did. Not only the same model of the sync, but it's the same actual sync. We went to the same apartment.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
Oh, so you just went to the apartment and filmed
it. We went
to
the apartment.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Because again, I think sync surroundings are very key to it as well. So,
yes. So this is a very ornate, incredibly pompously designed sink that's in this very nothing bathroom.
Yeah.
And that's why she is so out of place.
Yeah.
And I think I told Emily Blunt to play it as if she's overdressed and alone at a party. And that's exactly what she did.
How did the owner of Sync take this all? That you had been so thrown...
Well, I don't think I ever actually met the owner of Sync because this was a... I had been in that apartment through a friend and I couldn't remember whose apartment it was. But I just texted this girl and was like, do you remember that apartment in like the Upper West Side? Is there any way that we could film something there? And she's like, well, let me get you in touch with this person. And I didn't even make all those calls. SNL did. So I don't think
wow.
fully. I think maybe I met a lot of people on set. One of them probably was her.
Yeah. What was the... So you never got feedback as far as how Sync was received by the owner
of Sync? I don't
know
how Sync was received.
Okay.
No.
Excellent.
I have no idea. I hope they were flattered by it because I am in love with it.
Are you... Is that a piece... Because the thing I like the most about doing film pieces, writing film pieces, mm-hmm. is you have a level of control that you don't have with live.
Yes.
And so... When I look back at the pieces that I have the least amount of regret about, it's always things that were filmed because...
Sure.
And...
Because you could edit them.
You could edit them and it would never be a missed shot or... Mm-hmm. Because again, the Don King, who's cutting live, you know, his level mm-hmm. of difficulty is so hard because he has to do it at the moment. And
yes.
so... And what makes the live part of the show so vital is that sort of rough edges.
Yes.
Are you perfectly satisfied with that 90 seconds? Because that...
I am perfectly satisfied with that 90
seconds. You should be. It's really perfect.
Truly, Dave again found all of its beautiful angles, and it was lit so perfectly.
Yeah. It's funny because someone, of course, designed that sink. Now I've spent too much time. I spent too much time talking about the owner of the sink, but the designer himself.
The designer of the sink, I don't know. I don't know where sink comes from.
Yeah. What about when... Lin-Manuel was on the show.
Yeah.
You did a sketch for him where...
Yes.
We'll describe it. I feel like you'll do a better job describing it.
Sure. Okay. He is playing a Latin American from... We don't know what country he's from. He's an immigrant. He's in North Dakota. And he's calling his mom to sort of explain American life to her.
Yeah.
And it's sort of this dreamy, wide-eyed take on what life in North Dakota is like, which are sort of informed by what my perceptions of America were like when I was growing up abroad. Like, I remember thinking, their food looks gigantic.
Yeah.
Their food looks so big. So there's like a little bit of that there. And there's a mist of homoeroticism in it.
Yeah.
With a quarterback he meets.
Yeah.
Played by Alex Moffat.
Yeah. A mist is a good term for the homoeroticism.
Yes. Yeah. Just a whiz.
Someone sprayed it.
Yes. Just a little. Just a.
Yeah.
If you blink, you miss it.
Another one, you know, again, because I watch these pieces and they're so beautiful and so visual and. But I sometimes, thinking back to my experience at SNL, mm-hmm. I think, oh, how did that play at the table? Because...
Sure. Well, that one, I don't think it played great.
Yeah. So then...
But because I don't think it played great because it was in Spanish. And,
yeah.
And maybe not a lot of people at the table know Spanish. So, but I think they could tell that... It was a very visual, like a lot of the jokes were visual.
And was it something that Lin saw the potential of?
Yes. Yeah.
That's good.
I think that he was very excited about it from the very beginning.
Which is really helpful.
Yes,
because
it is.
Politics isn't the right term, I think, but I think the way that operation works is mm-hmm. sometimes there's something that a host can put there.
The host is a champion of the piece, and that certainly helps.
And that must have been... a really fun person to collaborate on a piece like that with.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely... I tend to love performers, hosts, who are almost unironic about their acting and are very earnest and are great actors. And Lin was certainly all of that.
Maybe my favorite performers of the year, speaking of that, Emma Stone and Wells for Boys.
Yes. Yeah.
Another fantastic performance.
Yes. forget her Oscar.
Yeah.
This is...
Well, it was part of the campaign.
Yes, it was part of the campaign. We all knew it.
They couldn't give her an Oscar for that. It's like a makeup Oscar.
Yeah, it's like a makeup Oscar, yeah. Yes.
So Wells for Boys. That was the title of it. Yeah,
Wells for Boys.
Who did you write that with?
With Jeremy.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Do you collaborate with Jeremy a lot?
A lot, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who do you share an office with?
With Sudi and Sashir.
Got it, okay.
Yeah. I had, when I was a little kid, this like giant empty like pot for a plant that I would just sort of run my fingers around and I would pretend that it was a well and there would always be like rainwater collected at the bottom of it. And I just loved it so much. And so I had the idea of a toy for sensitive boys to just sort of look at their reflection and contemplate existence for a little bit.
Were your parents aware of your love of your pot back in the day? Was that
think so.
Okay, gotcha. That was a very personal...
That was a very personal, intimate, just for me experience.
Is your family still in El Salvador?
Yes, they're all there.
And how are they consuming the show? Via the feed that they still have? Do they watch NBC?
No, they don't still have NBC. So sometime... In the past years, the NBC went away.
Okay.
And my parents are vaguely familiar with the show. They know that I work at it, and they know that it's a big show. One time my mother said to me, you know, I was talking to, I think, my aunt or something, and she said that it's a very competitive show, even for Americans. And I was like, sure, yeah. And I showed my dad... because my dad wanted to see like what I had been doing last time I visited. So I Googled that first sketch that I helped out with, which was a Mother's Day sketch with Brie Larson in it.
Right.
The one that I helped Sudi and Sashir with. And so I typed on the Google search bar, Brie Larson baby shower SNL. To just sort of hope that and it came up. And then he just sort of squints at the terms that I typed in, and he goes, so you work for Brie Larson baby shower. And then he saw SNL, but I think he didn't have his glasses on. So he saw it spelled S-N-I, and Spanish is his first language. So he goes, SNI. So you work for SNI. There were like so many questions coming at me from, and I was like, well, like, it's like, no. And so, no, I know. You work like that day, you work for SNE baby shower Brie Larson, but tomorrow you might be working for SNE baby shower someone else.
So did you get your sense of humor from your parents?
I don't know. Well, my mother's very observant.
Okay.
My mother is very observant, and she's an architect.
Okay.
And we were always surrounded by beautiful things.
Gotcha.
So I think the sink is probably heavily influenced by
okay,
her.
Okay, got it.
Because sometimes, and my dad's a civil engineer, and I remember sometimes them seeing like an architectural feature that was just ugly, and they would just like tear it apart for the entire car ride. They would just like the shade they would throw to like a door.
That's great.
Was just actually very informative now that I think about
that's
it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's a nice piece.
And they're very obsessive with details.
Yeah. My dad was an engineering major.
Uh-huh.
And I do think there's something with engineering and comedy. My dad's also a very funny guy, but there's something about construction. Like, jokes are constructed. And
yes.
There's an efficiency to them.
Yeah, certainly.
So, but Wells for Boys, that was so beautifully done. Dave again,
yeah.
And I imagine, because Emma's such a fan of the show, if my memory serves, like, she must have had an immediate appreciation for that.
I think she did, yeah. She seemed, because first I actually thought, oh, here we have this incredible actress, and she's playing a mom in a commercial. Like, I felt like I owed the host a part that was bigger than a mom in a commercial. But the power that she brought to it was so beautiful and delicate and so smart that it yeah.
The earnestness you were talking about, I think, is very important to so many of your pieces. Do you often find yourself having to direct people sort of away from comedy choices towards sort of the
sometimes,
explanation? Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Which is why I like working with people who don't normally do comedy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. With hosts that don't normally do comedy.
Yeah.
And it's such a great privilege to know how to use all the different cast members and all their different strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love, one of my favorite things is seeing Vanessa Bayer react to something.
Yeah, she's really good.
And just, you can put no lines, I mean, she would hate me, sorry, no lines to Vanessa, not yeah. zero. But just like watching her react to something is so
yeah.
remarkable.
I mean, some of the cast members are so great that way that I just remember like using them as crutches and that sort of thing. Of this piece
sure.
is not going great for me.
But here's Keenan.
Here's Keenan.
Yeah.
And also Keenan, who somehow has never yeah. repeated a reaction in
incredible.
A lifetime of sketch.
Truly incredible. Yes.
From childhood to now.
From conception to now.
Yeah. Still
never...
has. And you don't have to tell him.
No.
You don't have to explain what the sketch
nope.
is.
And he's so joyful.
He's so joyful.
Yeah.
And so I definitely had some duds in my time there, but I put three beats.
Of course.
Yeah. And it ultimately was just...
Don't we all?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It's so great talking to you again.
Yeah.
And how many shows do you guys have left?
Five or six.
Congrats on a great season. It's been really fun. And
obviously yeah,
the political
so
stuff
great.
Has been so great, but I feel like so much of the stuff you've done has been unique in a way that
thank you.
Could have existed at any time on the show. So thank you so much for being on my show tonight. Looking forward to stand up. And great talking to you, man.
Yeah, great talking to you. See you later.
Please welcome Julio Torres.
Hi. Hello, hi. I am Julio. I'm originally from El Salvador. But I live in Brooklyn now. At a, como se dice? Vegan queer collective. I am vegan, and I am so sorry. In my experience, the hardest part about being vegan is all of the apologizing. People ask me if I miss meat or dairy. I mean, I miss being liked. I don't miss cheese, but I do miss getting asked to do things. I miss my friends and I miss my family. Another fun fact about me is that I am almost always doing exactly what a Trump supporter imagines that I'm doing. And let me tell you, it's a lot of fun. As a child, my favorite cartoon character was, by far, Daisy Duck, Donald's wife, sometimes girlfriend. I love Daisy because whenever she blinked or whenever she closed her eyes, you could see that she was wearing a deep purple eyeshadow no matter where she was. And I just thought there was something so beautiful and so vulnerable about her accidentally revealing how much she cared. Donald was always late. And she never complained. But when she closed her eyes, I'd be like, oh no, she dressed up. My friend Brad had a birthday recently. and I didn't know what to get him. Now, I really don't mean to generalize, but my friend Brad, he's straight. So I got him the one thing I know all straight guys really, really, really like. I got him an empty Gatorade bottle to put in his room. I was walking down the street when this woman yells in my direction, "Birthday girl!" Now, she was clearly yelling to someone behind me. I'm not a girl, nor was it my birthday. But for a second, though, the world was mine. Thank you, everyone.
Julio Torres, everybody!
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.